What do you do when your life just blows? Trapped in a job where the bullshit flows? You feel like choking everyone you know, but wait! Sit right down and lend an ear. Let the Schadenfreude bring you cheer from the grief and the frustration. Here with plausible, audible, pauses.
In the 1980s, the Rainbow Bright cartoon series, based on a collection of Hallmark cards, was, just like rainbows themselves, a force of nature. Even if you were a follower of the Transformers or G.I. Joe, it was almost impossible not to have heard of it. Crazy as it sounds, it had a profound effect on my life. It taught me that, contrary to what the Republican Party may say, a little color really can make the world a better place. Normally, the plot line centers around the chipper, helpful Rainbow Bright, her sidekick Twink, and their amazing Technicolor dream team, the Color Kids.
There was Red Butler, the pretty boy of the group, Lala Orange, who was awfully fetching in that outfit of hers, Canary Yellow, who was sweeter than Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory and Candyland put together, Patio Green, who was the mischievous tomboy, Bunny Blue, who loved to exercise and had some problems.
You catch a tank around when there's work to do.
Indigo, who was the closest they ever came to racial diversity, other than those sprites, and Shy Violet, who took technobabble to a whole new level.
There's also the proletariat community of the sprites, but despite their background importance, they don't lend much to the overall story. This doesn't include the other kids, like Stormy, Tickle Pink, and Moonglow, but until I see Pink, Storm, or Moon in a rainbow, they could just as soon fuck off. You know, now that I think of it, I could have been a color kid.
I like to mauve it, mauve it. I like to mauve it, mauve it. I like to mauve it, mauve it. You like to mauve it.
It's all politics, but I can still dream. Rather than go episode by episode, the quickest way to explain Rainbow Bright's intrigue is to go straight for their magnum opus, the theatrical film entitled Rainbow Bright and the Star Stealer. Critics didn't enjoy this film. That goes without saying. Adults in general probably didn't enjoy this film, and frankly, the idea of having kids and being forced to wait in line for the marketing tool du jour doesn't thrill me. But none of that really matters because, as Kevin Smith said of Jersey Girl, it really wasn't for critics. That's why it's called a kids' movie. To be fair, the film pulled in about twice the producer's budget, a spread that beats even John Carpenter on a bad day. The film tells a tale of an established Rainbow Bright world which is preparing for springtime. No! Despite their sing-song exuberance, another girl named Stormy, a color kid representing Winter, and the ever-reputable upright individuals Murky Dismal and his bumbling cohort Lurky, are having none of it. Even after a hardcore humbling of her opposition, Rainbow is unable to kick off the spring season as her standard-issue star sprinkles have no effect on the bleary, frostbitten Earth. The moment she returns to Rainbow Land, she meets a strange mechanical being with a speech impediment from beyond the stars. Not quite, but the...
Oh, Wally! You're the bravest little cube I've ever met!
I didn't know he'd take it so hard.
You shut the fuck up, Toaster, before I drop you in a goddamn bathtub!
The visitor is Onyx, a jet-powered horse from outer space who was sent to Rainbowland on behalf of a fellow named Orin. Orin is an ancient and wise sprite who, along with his robotic horse and another new character, a fruity as pebbles Flash Gordon ripoff named Chris, protect the universe from those who seek to ruin it. Aforementioned ruiner is a nameless redhead known as the Dark Princess.
Mine. I've always loved the sound of that word.
And the Ruinee is a giant diamond planet called Spectra. Spectra acts as an amplifier, lending its warmth and ambient sense of joy to an otherwise bereft illumination. The Earth's extended winter is due to Spectra being eclipsed by a giant layer of netting which is woven on the planet's surface so the princess can add it to her collection, never mind where she plans to keep the damn thing. Between building an army of robots, brainwashing Spectra's local sprites, and concocting this insane plan, you have to admire her resolve. Despite evil slave generals, lizard men, robots, and other hurdles, the world is saved, Spectra's light brings color and happiness back to the universe, and all turns out for the best. In general, most of the Rainbow Bright series follows the same formula, usually involving some dope trying to swipe Rainbow Bright's rainbow-shooting color belt, or otherwise trying to drain all color from the world. And before you dismiss that as a subpar act of villainy, remember the words of Lewis Black.
These people are so evil, they have no color. And you don't fuck with that kind of evil.
Not to say the show wasn't cheesy, because man, it got cheesy. But if something's part of your childhood, it's a lot harder to say to yourself honestly that, I can't believe I thought this was any good. What matters isn't whether or not you enjoy it now. Rather, it's how it affected you as a kid and helped to fashion you into what you are. I, for instance, drifted into the performing arts, band, choir, theater. Don't you start. Don't you fucking... God damn it. Okay. Okay, that's really it. You think you can make me ashamed of my childhood? Well, suck on two loads of this.
That's right. I'll see you next time, folks.
I take out my knife and go, trusty throwing knife, you've killed many of...
Don't do this Bard the Guardsman shit. Just throw the knife.
What the hell is this shit?
That's what you are.
No! No!
What in the hell is up with here?
It's a single digit and it's just one line.